I will call the Energy and Utilities Finance and Policy Committee for January 22nd to order. We do have a quorum. We have one bill on the schedule today. We are waiting right now on revised handouts. So we will start testimony, and eventually Mr. Lee will hand out revised copies of Senate File 182. So what we will do is lay this over. There is no action on this. We are waiting for two additional components to go as a single package. And those are parts of a couple other bills that are still in process. So this will be laid over and held for that reason. So with that, we will begin Senate File 182, Senator Lang. If you'd like Senator Lang, we can just replay everything he said last time you're in front of us on this bill.
Well, I have the same script if you'd like me to read it, Mr. Chair. But, no,
do whatever you please.
Good morning. Again, Senator Lang, Senate File 182, and I do have an author's amendment.
Senator Goggin moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 182. This is the first stop, so this is an author's amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion carries. To the amended 182, Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment is exclusively sent to us by the administrative law judge. It is a clarification from some of the language we had last year in an effort to make it easier for that office to possibly distribute these funds in the future. And other than that, that's a technical amendment, Mr. Chair.
Already moved, so you're all up to speed.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Senate File 182, again, repeating what Senator Osmick has said, this is more or less the same bill that you all saw last year. So I'll refresh your memories a little bit. It provides the means and to address the closing, the business closings and the losses from the closure of the Benson Biomass, which is a bill we all voted on in 2017. We allowed Xcel Energy to purchase that plant and close it down. So we did, this is what I would consider part two of the bill, part 2B possibly, because we did have it last year. The initial part was where we compensated the city of Benson financially for their loss. The investments they had made towards the plant and the infrastructure around the plant. This part specifically addresses the businesses that are involved. There are upwards of 15 to 20 businesses that had cursory investments that have been, at this point, there's the plant closed in July this year, and at this point, those businesses are more or less out of business when it comes to the regards of the plant. So they worked in good faith when it came to what the state had provided. There was a 20-year contract in place. We ended that 11 years early. Most of these businesses were set up with a business model that kept them in business for 20 years. That was the way they structured their business loans. That was the way they structured their equipment. And that was the way they expected to make their money. We closed that early, and this is just a small portion to try to provide some sort of leniency when it comes to those losses. So the bill addresses the fact that this does come from the Renewable Development Fund, the RDF fund. It's a fund that was set up in 1994 to address the storage of nuclear waste gas in Prairie Island community, and that is where we're going to take the money from. So let me just remind the committee that this in no way makes these businesses whole. They're still struggling. This is just a small portion of that. So with that, Mr. Chair, any specific questions? I thank you for your consideration. I would appreciate your support.
Before we move on to testifiers, we do have Rick Evans from Xcel Energy to give us a quick overview of the Renewable Development Account. That's the new name that we put in for the RDF. Mr. Evans, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I know the members of the committee are familiar with the history of the fund, so I won't go into a lot of detail, though I'd be happy to answer any questions. You may recall that several years ago, the fund was moved from a fund that was held by Xcel Energy and used to make grants. It was moved into the Office of Management and Budget. with a deposit. At the time, there was some leftover RDA money held by the Department of Commerce. There was also some money, I'll take it back, there was actually no money held by Xcel Energy at the time. But in the meantime, we have continued to incur CASC fees, and that money is now being deposited directly into MMB in January of every year. I have not heard from MMB exactly how much money is in the account right now. My understanding is it's approximately $65 million. That's made up of the money that was transferred from the Department of Commerce, as well as the CASC fees that Xcel Energy paid. I know last year might have been the first year we actually made a payment to the fund. The payments to the funds are not perfectly predictable because there's some variables. We hold back the money that we need to pay for the Solar Rewards program. That's a production-based program, so how much we have to withhold will depend on how much energy those solar panels produce. Same thing goes for the REPI, which is an old wind incentive program that dates back some years, and that's also a production incentive, and so it depends on what the production is. In addition, the number of casks that we deploy at any given time has some variability to it, so we can't predict off into the future very far exactly when casks will go onto the plant, onto the site, and that will increase the amount. What I can tell you is that this month we will contribute an additional $12,566,000 to the fund. That is after we've withheld everything that we're required to withhold under the law. Next year, our estimate is we'll put another $14.2 million into the fund. In 2021, currently looking at $16.9 million. And then in 2022, we see a significant increase, and we'll be putting about $28.5 million into the fund starting in 2022. The reason the number goes up is because the obligations that we are paying with what we withhold are going down. So the REPI contracts start to expire. The payments made to Laurentian and to the city of Benson start to expire. And as those click off, that leaves more money that is not obligated, which is what we put into MMB. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer. But that's, you know, the current state of the account.
Questions from members for Mr. Evans. Senator Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Evans. I just wanted to clarify, because I didn't hear you, perhaps, but the estimated payment in 2019 to the account, could you just cover that number again, and if that has been made yet or if that is still coming?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, it is $12,566,000. I don't know if it has been made. Under the law, it's to be made on January 15th. What we found out in the meantime is that the estimates that we get that we base the REPI payments on are not available to us on the 15th. So last year and this year, we worked out an arrangement with MMB. The payments will be, if it hasn't been made today, they will be made this month, but they are a little delayed from what the statute requires because we haven't got the information we need. If we get around to cleaning up this law, that's one of the things we might ask, is that we delay that payment date in the law so that we can be fully in compliance. But the payments are being made as required by law.
Is Senator
that one little exception?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could just deviate a little bit, Mr. Evans, because you probably know the answer to this better than I, and I probably did know it at one time. District Energy works pretty well in St. Paul. These two projects didn't work. Is it a function of transportation costs? Or I don't need a long answer, two or three sentences.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sengen, District Energy is also very expensive energy.
Okay.
They produce energy, they produce heat for the city of St. Paul, so it has some different features to it. They have about 7 or 8 years left on their contract, but it's the same. It's not distinguishable in terms of cost from these two plants.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions to Mr. Evans or to the bill author? Then we'll move into testimony. Seeing none. Senator Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know, first I have a question. Just with reference to the 182 that was just recently handed out, is this the same as we originally had, or what is the difference here?
First copy had lines missing, which that appears to be what the problem is, but it is the amendment that you have in front of you that we moved on the A1 is now put into 182, and that's 182 that we just handed out.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair,
Senator Simonson,
understanding your intent is to lay the bill over, just want to take the opportunity to talk about the underlying bill and then the funding source a little bit, if I could. I think I supported this bill last year, and I'm certainly going to support it again as we go forward. I think the intent of trying to offset some of the impacts to these businesses is a good idea, and oftentimes the question is whether the state can afford it or not. And in this case, the account that the money is coming out of is one that is often disputed as to whether it's an appropriate source or not. And in this particular case, I think there perhaps is a different opportunity for a funding source that we should explore. This account, as we've heard many times, and everybody here knows, and I'm not going to repeat it all, but this account was set up for a specific purpose in law originally several years ago. And the question just remains, and as I said earlier to someone, I think that this question will continue to come up as long as this county exists. But, Mr. Chair, I think there's an opportunity here for us to explore some other, a different funding source, if you will. So I know if you're willing to entertain it, I do have the A2 amendment at this time, if you're willing.
Certainly can. The A2 amendment has been moved by Senator Simonson. And we will have the pages hand that out.
And I can speak to it, Mr. Chair, while it's coming around.
Sure. If that works. Senator Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So the A2 members is a very simple amendment. It simply changes the funding source for the $40 million that will be set aside to offset some of the impacts to these businesses as a result of the plant closure. And rather than take $40 million out of the renewable development account, the amendment, as you will see, simply requires Xcel to pay the $40 million out of their estimated savings from the early termination of the plant itself. And I think, you know, we have numbers, as you see in the amendment, estimated to be in the neighborhood of about $345 million in savings. Maybe we'll hear some comments or some feedback on that. But I think it's certainly a more appropriate use of the RDA is to leave those dollars in that account and use them for renewable development projects as we go forward. Oftentimes there are many more requests than we have the ability to pay for out of that account, as we are all aware. But, Mr. Chair, it's just a simple amendment, and I think it changes the funding source, yes, but it also accomplishes the underlying intent of the bill, and I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. I think Mr. Evans probably can answer, because I have had that previous discussion with him, why this may not be a workable solution, though well-intentioned. Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair, yes. Before I say that, I do want to make sure I correct something, or at least be clear on something that Senator Senjum asked me before. The three biomass contracts, the Fibromin contract, the Laurentian contract, and the St. Paul District Energy contract, were each negotiated separately, so the prices were not the same, and I may have left the impression that they were the same. What I can tell you is they are all three significantly expensive and in a similar range, so I don't want to be unclear about that. On the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair, I understand the spirit of the amendment. From our point of view, the biomass experiment was required by the state of Minnesota. We participated in it. It was not a successful experiment. It ended up costing our customers a lot of money. The cessation of those contracts saved our customers a lot of money. I don't believe it's fair to our customers or in the interest of our customers that they continue to pay for this misbegotten policy. If the Renewable Development Fund is not the right fund to pay this out of, which also comes from Xcel Energy customers. So it's just it's one more way that Xcel Energy customers are paying for a bad policy that arose out of opposition to the nuclear plants, which of course now are considered to be a significant asset in terms of fighting climate change and providing energy to our customers. So we object, I guess, on behalf of our customers to having them continue to pay. If the state of Minnesota decided to create this problem, if there's money that's needed to fix the problem, you know, perhaps the state of Minnesota should come up with it. But I don't see why our customers should have to.
And I'll go to Senator Lang next. I just want to get a bit of a clarification while we're on this subject, Mr. Evans. And I know I've spoken with you about this. In order to achieve what Senator Simonson is proposing, would it not be true that the $40 million that would have to be captured would actually go back onto the fuel clause and actually would result in increased rates on Xcel ratepayers to pay for this $40 million? Is that a fair characterization?
Mr. Chair, yeah, we would have to collect it either through a separate rider, or through the fuel clause. I mean, if this were the way the legislature decided to go, we would have to devise a method by which we would collect it. The savings are going to our customers, and so if this is to come out of the savings, we would have to find a way to claim it back, and it would be through some kind of a rider or through through the fuel clause, but that would have to be part of the calculation for how we would do this.
Senator Lang to the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Simonson. I just want to back up for just a split second and first of all, thank Mr. Evans and the Xcel team actually for being as understanding as they have been throughout this process. This is not an idea we did not have. We've crossed this bridge. We've looked at it from a legal point. We looked at it from a moral standpoint, and where do we keep socking the Xcel customers with these fees? You know, like I said in the past, this bill has been, to say it's been thoroughly vetted is kind of an understatement. We've gone through it in committee after committee, in meeting after meeting. I think Mr. Evans is probably sick of listening to me, but at this point, I would have to say that I could not be supportive of the amendment, and I would recommend the committee view it the same way.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's almost brilliant when you think about capturing savings in order to pay for things. It's almost like what we've done, you know, within education or health and human services, and oh yeah, education, which committee I used to serve on. The idea, it's still taking money from a certain source. So source A is still going to be the money. I still have a problem with money coming in out of this RDA or RDF fund that we have. And, you know, full disclosure, I am an Xcel ratepayer. Gladly pay my bill every month, although once in a while you miss that. But is this, and maybe Mr. Evans could answer this question, the $40 million that was already paid through Xcel ratepayers based upon the taxation of the, you know, the CAS, et cetera, or the $40 million that comes out of the proposed savings, right? It's mythical dollars in the sense of we don't know if it's savings or not savings. It could be, in this case, forecasted savings, right? So either way you look at it, whether we accept the amendment or not the amendment, it's still $40 million that comes on the backs of Xcel ratepayers. Is that a correct assumption?
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the $40 million that would come out of the RDA was collected from our customers, too. I mean, this is all just a pass-through that, you know, we, under the 1994 law, we collected these funds and we collected them from our customers. And if we had to come up with an additional $40 million out of the savings, then that would have to also be collected from our customers.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, I think that answered my question. So if, regardless, you're dipping into that mythical dollar amount from some fund, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a pass-through anyway. It's $40 million or it's 2 times $40 million is what we're getting to. If we look at the $345 million, you're actually dipping twice on Xcel customers. Is that a correct assumption?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Cherry, I agree with that assessment. I can see where others might not, but
so just to clarify it, that we would, if this amendment did go on, we're going to probably need, when we bring the bill back up again, some type of language that directs the PUC to allow a rate rider or some level of mechanism to create the $40 million because it doesn't actually exist. Otherwise, there is no mechanism by which we're creating something that doesn't have that mechanism. The reason why we're going at the RDA is because we already have the mechanisms to capture it. So that's the difference here. Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I agree if you would need a little more language to accomplish that, but I want to get back to the whole concept again. It says here $345 million. I don't know if that's the right number for the Benson plant or whatever, but it is saving, is out of that savings. When Xcel and others came here and said, we want to back away from the Benson plant, I think it was a reasonable decision, but we ought to cover all the costs of it. I think it's the letter from the truckers and the local businesses that were hurt by this says. I mean, the legislation did provide some help for the community and other things, which is very appropriate, but did not provide the compensation for the suppliers and transporters. And I think that's Senator Lang's bill is appropriately trying to do that. But again, it ought not come out of the RDF, which was very clearly not intended for that purpose. It was intended for renewable development. And Mr. Evans, you said how a bad decision because the biomass didn't pan out. Well, the wind did pan out very well and saved Xcel customers. So that agreements, the point is that this ought to come out of those savings, and it's not that hard to work out language that can make sure, whether with a rider or something else, that we can get the money. I mean, the cash flow might be a little problem. We can deal with that, but I'd strongly urge support for the amendment because I think the Prairie Island Tribes letter here today makes it very clear. They quote from the 1994 creation of the RDF saying, funds in the account can only be expended for development of renewable energy resources. And then they go on to say that this legislation would use it for payments to private parties that will result in absolutely no development of renewable energy. We believe it's a clear violation of the letter and the spirit of the law. We vigorously oppose it. And I think that's the whole point. That fund is not meant for this purpose. I'm an Xcel customer, if we're saving money from the shutting of the Benson plant, we ought to cover all the expenses of shutting it down too. It's still savings, as Senator Simonson's amendment shows. There's a lot left in the savings despite that, but we should cover all the costs when we make a choice like that.
Mr. Evans, just maybe to clarify the points that Senator Marty made, there was discussion. I mean, we've had discussions previously about honoring the contracts, and maybe you might want to more clarify that contracts that were on the books were honored through the conclusion of the contracts versus what this fund is to do. I think that might be a good point for you to clarify.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not entirely sure what you're asking me, but in the conversations about the 1994 agreement, there's been a lot of talk about a contract, and what happened, I'll give you the Reader's Digest condensed version here, is that as a part of that law, we were required to build a certain amount of biomass and build a certain amount of wind energy, and we were also required to enter into a contract with the state to build a certain amount of that same amount of biomass and the same amount of wind energy. The idea was that if Xcel were to come back and try to change the law and get out from under those mandates, that there would be a contract, that we would have an additional contract obligation. And in the course of that, in the contract itself, which is just a one-page document, it said that the Prairie Island Indian community would be an intended third-party beneficiary of that contract. And I think the intention at the time was that if the state did not enforce the contract because they changed the policy, that the Prairie Island Indian community would also have the obligation, or rather would have the alternative of enforcing the contract. None of that ever got tested. In the meantime, over many discussions about nuclear energy storage, we actually entered into an additional contract with the Prairie Island Indian community. Essentially bought them out of the first contract. The state has not made any attempt to enforce the first contract. And in fact, we lived up to the first contract. We signed all of the agreements that we were required to sign under the 1994 law, and that contract has been met with consideration to the state and with consideration to the Prairie Island Indian community by entering into a further contract which replaced the original contract. So the agreements that were made in 1994, were honored, performed by XL Energy, and we feel like we don't have any additional contractual obligations. And, of course, our legal obligations are what are contained in the law.
Senator Marty.
And, Mr. Chair, to that point, Mr. Evans, the tribe's letter does not mention any contractual case to it. I think they're aware of it, as you are, and we're aware of that. The other agreements you've done since that time, that doesn't change the legal commitments that were made here, and that's why I'm opposing the change in that legal commitment we made to use the fund only for development of renewable energy resources. And this is going against that, and the tribe, as they say, it's a violation of the letter and the spirit of the law, and I share that. I think it is a violation of that, and if you succeed in the legislation, you get the ability to do that, but I don't think that makes it right. And the tribe, and I didn't claim either a contractual right. I'm just saying that's the way it was, and that's the letter and the spirit of the law.
Seeing no further, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Evans, if I could just have you once again, I wasn't writing fast enough or paying close enough attention to the amounts that are coming in over the next couple of years. It's about $12 million this year. It's about $12 to $15 million per year for the next few years.
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, I was sent this just today, right. So I'm going to have to look at my phone here to make sure I answer precisely. But so the deposit this month for 2018 will be $12,566,000.
All right.
The deposit projected for next year at this time is $14,296,000. The amount projected for 2021 is $16,933,000. And the amount projected for 2022 would be $28,500,000.
So, Mr.
Senator Dibble?
So, Mr. Chair, so taking $40 million out would represent about a little over 2 years, 2.5 years worth of payments into the RDF. So 2.5 years worth of activities that could otherwise be carried out under the purposes of the RDF would have to forego that for this purpose. Things wouldn't happen because we're choosing to spend this money in a different way. Is that an accurate statement?
Mr. Evans?
I didn't do the math, but depending on which years you were looking at, it would be, a year and a half to 2.5, depending on which of those years you were looking at. What might otherwise be done with the money is, a matter of some speculation at this point. The money is, under the last revision of the law, the money is there for the legislature to use. There's actually been more money spent out of the fund by the legislature than by the original grant-making program that was set up. I won't swear that that's right, but it's pretty close because, as you know, the legislature has tapped the fund a number of times for various uses, some related to renewable energy and some not. So I guess I can't speculate as to what the future use of the fund might be.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Evans, I wanted to touch on something I thought you mentioned before, did you say that Xcel was mandated, required to be a part of this biomass project?
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes. The 1994 law, which was the law that permitted us to move storage outside of the plant and into the casks, also had the provision that required us to purchase a certain number of megawatts of biomass energy and a certain number of megawatts of wind energy. That was the To my recollection, that was the earliest mandated renewable energy in the state of Minnesota was from the 1994 law.
Senator Pratt.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I'm sympathetic to the concerns of the Prairie Island tribe, but it seems to me that if the goal of the RDA is to promote research and development of renewables, is it the argument that part of R&D sometimes is to be able to back out of failed projects?
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I've never made that argument before, but I kind of like it. So.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I guess, Mr. Chair, that's the way I would look at this, and because it seems it doesn't feel like this is a, you know, when we talk about savings, and Senator Hoffman called it mythical money, this was, you know, this is savings of a loss. It's not additional profit, as I see it, and that's why I and when you invest in these projects, some are going to pan out, some aren't. And I think that part of R&D is understanding the full cost of some of these research and development projects. So, Mr. Chair, I'll respectfully oppose the amendment.
For any further discussions, Senator Marty.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, the difference is that when you back out of a R&D thing because it's not working, you pay the cost you have to pay. If it only saves them, according to this amendment, if only saves them $300 million, fine. You only save $300 million instead of $340 million. But the point is that when you cut bait because it's time to do so because it doesn't make sense. Again, I didn't oppose them doing that. I opposed them doing it without compensating the people who are lost in the process. But saying that compensation 2 years later should come back in, use the fund for renewable development to pay for something, you shouldn't have taken as much back from it when you cut the losses because the loss was already there. That loss to the truckers and the suppliers, that loss occurred as part of the thing already, and so when you're paying out the contract, when we paid off Benson and other things, we should have included this in the deal. And that's why I'm saying it doesn't come out of the renewable development fund. That was meant for renewable development, not for increasing the savings when you back out of renewable development.
To Senator Marty's comment, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, I'm not making the argument that it's increasing the savings. What I'm saying is that, to me, this is a cost of R&D. And if the fund was set up to do research and development, then it seems to me that the cost of backing out of those contracts when a project doesn't work is part of the cost of R&D.
Senator Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good discussion as always, but I would just make two final points from myself. And then one is that we have heard numbers in the area of an estimated $345 million in savings. So the $40 million represents, you know, less than 12% of the projected savings. I fully understand the point that Senator Hoffman and Mr. Evans were talking about. That's real. But the projected savings are also real dollars. And I think the point that I'm really trying to stress is that it is very possible that in the very near future we're going to see other requests out of this account that are directly related to fresh, new renewable energy projects to particular communities in our state. And my fear is that we're not going to be able to fund some of those projects in their entirety, which will be unfortunate. But as we get into that discussion later on, let us just be mindful that today here is an opportunity to perhaps preserve some of those dollars in the renewable development account and use them for actual renewable development projects.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Evans, of course, this bill was in the finance bill last year, the supplemental bill last year. So there is $65 million that's sitting in the account right now, correct?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's correct. I didn't call MMB and asked. Actually, I did call them, but I haven't heard back from them yet as to what the balance is in that account. But I think that's in the ballpark.
Okay, thank you. And Mr.
Senator Rosen, I was just informed it's $58 million according to council.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
So the 12.5 that is going to be put in this year, and then the 14.2 that's put in 2020, I mean, we're adding up some significant dollars into this RDA fund. For some of the members around here, this has been a fund that is near and dear to my heart, too, because we did a lot of work in 11 and 12 to adjust this to make sure that it was used for the appropriate projects that we felt the fund was designated for at the very beginning. However, with that, this Benson Biomass and Laurentian was a mandated program that are consequences. And I have to agree with Senator Pratt that with those consequences becomes a responsibility to the people where it did not work. And you have this fund that can take that responsibility for those consequences that did not turn out. It's unprecedented, but if we did not have that fund, I would absolutely say, no, I don't think we can make these businesses whole, because then we're setting a precedence going forward for any business that wasn't able to make it. But this was a mandated program from the legislature to a utility. So with that, I think that to get this all straightened out and move forward, get this done, get it paid for, we have money that was set aside last year, make these, as you said, Senator Lang, it's not going to make them whole, but perhaps it will help ease the pain of this failed enterprise. And then I look forward to using the remainder of that money on projects. We have a lot of exciting things coming down the pipeline in energy, and look forward to having that RDA fund being able to support those projects.
Senator Barney.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I appreciate your great work on the RDF a couple years ago, but I agree with every part of your statement except for that this money ought to come out of the RDA. I fully agree these folks should have been compensated. They should have been compensated when we shut down the plant. They ought to be compensated now. It's just a question that's not the purpose of RDF, and the fact that there's money in the bank, it's one of the reasons we should never have removed it from a fund to a state account. I mean, I think that was a big mistake a couple years ago, and as Mr. Evans said, the legislature's raided it a number of times, and I'd argue not always for renewable development purposes, but this is one that it's not. This was one that they appropriately wanted to shut down and appropriately should pay all the costs out of it, not out of the renewable development account.
Seeing no further discussion, I just want to make a point of clarification on this. So currently, as the bill stands with the A2 amendment, or I'm sorry, A1 amendment, the money would come from the RDA. This amendment, with obviously when we laid over, it would have to require additional language to deal with a rate rider or some other recovery method. This would change it to having a $40 million essentially increase against either the fuel clause or against some type of mechanism to capture it. So that is what is occurring here, Senator Dibble. I was hoping not to create another firestorm.
Well, that's an assertion that's been made. I don't know that that's for sure. I mean, Mr. Evans has said that. You've said that. We haven't heard from council. But there's no reason why Xcel can't just pay the money. I don't know that they have to go capture it in some special way from the PUC. We don't know that for a fact.
I would agree with you, Senator Dibble.
We can vote for this, and then find out the answer to that question, and then consider whether that this amendment would remain on the bill in light of some information from council or the PUC.
And Senator Dibble, I think I agree with you. One way or another, some type of mechanism will have to be added to this, assuming that this goes on. I would assume Senator Simonson will be working to deal with that as opposed to going to the RDA. So I think we both agree. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Senator Osmick?
No.
Vice Chair Matthews? No. Senator Marty?
Aye.
Senator Marty?
Yeah.
Aye.
Sorry. Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Goggin? Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Pratt. No. Senator Rosen. No. Senator Senjum.
Nay.
Senator Simonson.
On a vote of 4-5, the amendment does not prevail. Any further comments to the author or any further amendments? Then we'll move on to testifiers. Seeing none, we do have a list of a few testifiers that wish to come forward. First one is Randy Tersteeg, and second will be Craig, and I'm not going to start, something to that effect. You'll pronounce it better than I can, so I don't even try it. So, Mr. Tersteeg, please state your name for the record. Begin your testimony.
Randy Tersteeg. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm speaking today on behalf of two companies in which I play a leading role. I'm the president and CEO of North American Fertilizer, a company which received the ash material created from the burning of biomass at the Benson Power Plant. The ash produced from the burning of turkey litter was the key ingredient for the production of a fertilizer product that we sold across the state and the region. I also represent Beaver Creek Transport, a company that provides transportation services hauling turkey litter and other biomass to supply the plant. These are two companies that were specifically built around serving the power plant. We have a great deal at stake, having invested approximately $15 million in equipment which cannot easily be converted to another purpose. Both of these companies had agreements spanning the 22-year commitment made not only by our contracting companies, but by the state of Minnesota's mandate. We are so closely integrated, I should say we were so closely integrated with the power plant that some of our permanent equipment was actually installed on the power plant grounds. They could not operate without us. We cannot operate without them. The day the power plant closed, the materials for our fertilizer disappeared. This harm is not abstract. It will have a broad regional impact. North American Fertilizer is one-third owned by the Bird Island Soil Service Cooperative, a Minnesota cooperative which has 240 farmer members. The Bird Island Soil Service Cooperative purchased fertilizer wholesale from North American Fertilizer and sold the fertilizer into the retail market, realizing significant increased gross revenue to the farmer owners of the cooperative. The farmers and the other owners of North American Fertilizer will lose the profits they would have realized under the agreement. In addition, North American Fertilizer owners face significant stranded capital investment for the equipment purchase specifically to serve the biomass energy plant. Beaver Creek Transport also had contractual relationships with Benson Power and North American Fertilizer. Beaver Creek delivered poultry litter to the facility and managed the wood yard to ensure that the fuel was available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days per year, so that the facility never ran out of fuel, and it never did. Several weeks before the announcement of the intent to close the facility, Beaver Creek increased the amount of tons of fertilizer it would sell and market per year. Since the legislature approved the closing of the plant in 2017, I have worked and traveled endlessly to find a replacement business for these two companies. Beaver Creek Transport has already invested upwards of $1 million on research and equipment in hopes of starting a new venture. However, without receiving the funds that we would have received from operating these companies, we will not be able to rebuild businesses that are providing the economic benefits to Western Minnesota. The success these two companies achieved did not come easily. For the past 12 years, I have put almost all of my resources and time into these companies. North American Fertilizer was the first of its kind in the United States. I had to personally guarantee all the loans for these two companies. I had to make sure our facility was operational at the same time the power plant was ready because they could not start without us. I felt proud of the fact that we were providing good jobs, returns for our investors, and producing a fantastic renewable fertilizer product used in Western Minnesota. Of all the risks we took on, from financial to product acceptance, never did I imagine that the state of Minnesota would be in essence the one to put us out of business. My family's livelihood, the investment of 240 plus farmers
and all of our employees were counting on me. I was shocked the day I heard about the potential legislation to close the plant, which, by the way, I first became aware of when I read it in a newspaper. As I stand back and look at what has transpired over the last 2 years, I know the average XL ratepayer will save a few dollars on their monthly bill, but I also see my companies and my peers, the people who work the hardest, risk the most, are bearing the largest financial burden. I don't feel that's right. I greatly appreciate the bill Senator Lang has introduced to provide a measure of relief for businesses like ours. I also appreciate your work last year to approve a very similar measure to help our businesses. I support this bill and hope the legislator once again approves this compensation fund. Thank you for letting me tell my story today, and I'm pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Craig.
Matuszynski.
Thank you for clarifying your name. Please begin your testimony.
Yeah, Chair Osmick, Senators. My name is Craig Matuszynski. I represent 10 of the suppliers and haulers of fuel material to the Benson facility. This group in total represented about 70% of the fuel that was consumed at that facility. On July 1st, effectively, their revenue stream from the contracts that they had with the Benson facility went to zero. And the last half then of last year, they received zero in revenues from that facility. The projected impact as in lost economic value from the closure of the facility to this group alone is about $62 million. That number is calculated by taking the revenues that they would have received and subtracting from that the expenses they would have incurred for labor, fuel, other items from the revenue stream, any capital investment that they would have needed to make over the remaining period of the contract to serve the need of the facility, and then offsetting that with any salvage that may have been left over from equipment and so forth at the end of the contract term. And this has been done on a net present value basis to determine the true economic impact to these customers. This is a true loss. These companies had made approximately $120 million of investment total over since 2006 or 7 when the plant first started operating to the current time period. Approximately $50 million of that investment had been made in the period since 2014 after the plant had emerged from reorganization under the bankruptcy code. The closure of this facility was projected to affect approximately 285 employees of these companies, these businesses. I might add they are small businesses, many of them family-owned businesses, many of them third and fourth generation businesses that have been in the timber and logging industry in northern Minnesota for many, many years. Since the closure of the facility on the employee front, there have been approximately 96 employees that have been laid off by these businesses. There are approximately 67 employees who have seen their hours reduced, a total of 163 employees that have been adversely impacted from the closure of the facility. These companies, of course, are not standing around waiting for someone to bail them out. They have taken action to take and mitigate the losses that they are incurring. In the past 6 months, these companies have sold a total of 13 pieces of equipment that have generated approximately $600,000 in cash flow, and that is across all 10 of these businesses. This is approximately 42% of the equipment that has been offered for sale, and they have received on the order of 60% of the unrecovered investment in those specific pieces of equipment that was on their books. So by unrecovered, I mean the net book value after taking into account the depreciation over the used life of that equipment. They have forfeited approximately $100,000 in value on leases for timber that they acquired specifically for the purpose of meeting the needs of the Benson facilities. There's another $800,000 of lease payments that is at risk if they fail to find new markets for their material. They have also made attempts to find new business opportunities. In total, from all 10 of these businesses, they have been able to replace a little, right around 10%, maybe a little bit more than 10% of the cash flow stream that they had before the closure of the Benson facility. This, of course, would mitigate some, reduce the $62 million negative economic impact to maybe something closer to $55 or $56 million of impact, but still far short of what was expected and far short of the investment that they've made. Now, they'll continue, of course, in good faith to try and mitigate. They all have an obligation to themselves to do that, if nothing else. But there have also been negative impacts in the market. Somebody brought up the St. Paul District Heating Facility earlier. Some of these members of this group provide fuel to that facility. That facility is now paying about $5 per ton of fuel less than they were before the closure of the Benson facility. That is because there is so much more material in the market looking for a home. Similarly, there have been impacts on the prices of timber products in the market at large, which has seen a general decline and has squeezed the profitability of suppliers for round wood and other materials in the market. I guess in short, I'll also say that used equipment market has seen a decline in prices. This is why they have received, below book value in many cases for the equipment that they have actually had to sell. They're going to continue, of course, to look for opportunities to improve their position, but the likelihood of being able to make up the total or even a significant portion of that $55 million or so negative economic value is going to be very limited. So those are my comments.
Questions to these two testifiers? Seeing none, thank you for coming today. We have two additional testifiers, Scott Dane and Steve Skellerud. Start with Mr. Dane. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Scott Dane. I'm the executive director of the Associated Contract Loggers and Truckers of Minnesota. I want to thank you again for taking up this matter. We almost had it last year. Hopefully we'll be successful this year. But in the meantime, Minnesota's biomass market remains substantially reduced and deteriorating. The Benson markets are fully terminated. Minnesota Power has terminated biomass power generation in Grand Rapids. Effective last month, Laurentian Energy Authority has reduced biomass consumption by 50% and reduced the purchase price by 15% for the few remaining suppliers, with the anticipation of full phase-out as the city completes conversion to natural gas. The Associated Contract Loggers and Truckers has led the effort to identify, attract, and develop new biomass markets, but has had no success to date, despite visits from Canadian companies and other out-of-state companies exploring potential opportunities. None have materialized. Well, actually, let me back up. We did have one company that distilled, that used biomass for distilling to create a preservative, a natural-based preservative, and was successful at that. Unfortunately, their projected consumption of biomass will be 2 truckloads a month. So far short of what these guys have lost. Nevertheless, a step in the right direction. We're all working on this. Minnesota's lost over half of its forest products industry in the last 10 years. The solution to this problem is more markets, traditional and new technology, such as high-value bioenergy and biochemical. The public and private sector are pursuing these opportunities, but they'll take years at best. In the meantime, and this is the most important thing and probably why we're here, the preservation of the logging infrastructure is critical to the supply chain and making sure it remains intact to support new and existing forest products industries. Without the loggers and truckers, it will not matter once they are gone. It will be too late. This legislation received bipartisan support last session and is even more necessary as these companies are impacted by having this, you know, 8 months since we were here last. And they've struggled to survive. They've expended whatever financial resources and reserves they've had to avoid laying off more people, shutting down, or declaring bankruptcy. Short of this legislation, they will not be able to avoid these inevitable outcomes. Rural Minnesota needs the jobs that these companies represent. And by supporting this legislation, it might just be that that lifeline that keeps these people, these family businesses, in business as new markets are developed, identified, and developed. And we ask your support. Thank you.
Mr. Scalarud, state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Steve Scalarud. Chairman Osmond, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today in regards to Senate File 182. I am Steve Scalarud, owner of Hulls Brothers Trucking, located in St. Joseph, Minnesota. We have been a transportation provider for Benson Power, hauling turkey manure, which was used to fuel the power plant. I purchased the company 2.5 years ago, in large part due to the relationship the company had with Benson Power, as well as the assurances that the biomass mandate provided for the next 12 years. For 8 consecutive years prior to my purchase of the company, Hulls Trucking received increased volume allocations from Benson Power. After I purchased the company, the trend continued, and so did our investment in equipment to serve Benson Power. For perspective, the value of the equipment needed to serve Benson Power alone was $6 million. As is true with most business purchases, the price I paid for the company was a function of company earnings and the industry earnings multiple. For calendar year 2018, when Benson Power operated for half of the year, January through June, our earnings were down 66%. While this is a catastrophic number, we project even worse results in 2019 when Benson Power doesn't operate at all. In fact, we project a significant operating loss. We are working extremely hard to replace the Benson Power business. As proof, our top line revenue numbers are down only 7% in 2018. Because we have increased our business with existing customers and added many new customers to our customer portfolio. And you may ask, how can earnings be down 66% when revenues are only down 7%? The answer is it takes years and years to rebuild efficiencies and backhauls when you lose a customer that represented over half of your business. We have lost 66% of our earnings despite replacing 84% of the Benson Power revenue. How can that be? The answer is we are running more empty truck miles in an effort to serve new customers. Our company had developed a portfolio of customers with complementary locations over the last 10 years when Benson Power operated. For example, we would often haul loads eastbound for customers located in close proximity to Benson Power after making deliveries to Benson. Now we are deadheading, or in other words, running empty trucks to western Minnesota to pick up eastbound loads from these other customers. This concept and the economics that surround it are very well known in the transportation industry. When customers expand or contract, transportation companies like ours adapt to the changes over time as the customer dynamics change. The closure of Benson Power is completely different as compared to these normal market-driven changes. Here are the major differences. First, the biomass mandate created a completely new industry. By definition, many of the Benson supplier companies were in large part built around the Benson Power opportunity, which was created and supported by the biomass mandate that provided a 20-year time horizon for investment recovery and return on investment. As a result, Benson Power represented between 50 and 60% of total revenue for my company and for many others in the logging and trucking business. We invested as a group in excess of $120 million to meet the fuel and transportation requirements Secondly, the abruptness of the repealing of the biomass mandate in year 10 of this 20-year mandate left the supplier group with less than half of their revenues and an even smaller fraction of their earnings and no way to repay their debt. This at a time when we all need to invest even more money in different types of equipment in order to serve new customers and markets. Examples of these equipment are different tractor and trailer types to haul new classes of freight, wood chip dryers to enable alternative uses for scrap wood, and earth-moving equipment, which can enable some of these companies to enter industries related to their core business. All of this equipment is expensive, extremely expensive. Combine this need for additional equipment with the fact that we can't borrow money because our earnings have been decimated, and the result is that our businesses will be bankrupt without the help of this legislation. I have projected that my trucking company will be bankrupt in the first quarter of 2020 without this help, and with it comes the loss of 45 jobs. None of us here today want to be here asking for your help. We would much rather be running our businesses, but the cold, hard truth is that the abrupt loss of over half of our business leaves us no tools with which to move forward. I would ask for your support of this bill because the businesses that enabled Benson Power to operate are the very businesses that will be bankrupt due to shutting down an industry with the flip of a switch. The legislature turned it on, and the legislature turned it off. That is not normal business, and the resulting carnage is not a reasonable outcome for the companies that made Benson Power run. I've heard some legislators refer to Benson Power as an experiment. Was it? If so, I really wish someone would have told us. Regardless of the answer, it was not an experiment for the supplier group in this room. Again, we've invested over $120 million and were cut short 10 years into a 20-year deal. The supplier group appreciates your leadership, help, and support that you provided us last year as we brought forward a similar bill. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to address the committee today, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Questions from the committee for these two testifiers? Seeing none, we appreciate you coming in today. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill at this time? Not seeing any. Senator Lang, a wrap-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think we've all kind of come full circle on this one. The numbers that we've just gone over here sitting at the table are numbers that I wanted to avoid hearing. Last year at the end of session, I thought we had all had a good product. I appreciate your amendment, Senator Simonson, I really do. Don't think for a second that hasn't gone through our heads and that we haven't worked on that angle of it as well. Senator Marty, I appreciate your efforts and help last year. At the end of the day, these businesses aren't against the wall. They're over it. We have to, at this point in time, we have to help them out. There's plenty of them there. I'll wrap up. Sorry. That being said, I think at the end, this is a good bill. I think we're in a good position with it, and I appreciate your support on it.
Any further comments from members of the committee? Thank you, Senator Lang. As you know, I've been very forceful in wanting this up front. We tried to get it through as a single at the end, single subject item at the end of last session. Unfortunately, we weren't successful, but I did, throughout the entire process, make sure that we had it inside of the larger bill, and we were successful. Unfortunately, the veto ended that, and I was very sad when that happened. I know there were members that had contacted the governor's office. There were businesses that had contacted the governor's office saying how important this was. That it should be something that he strongly considers before he does issue his veto and take it all down. Unfortunately, it did happen for other circumstances, and that is last year. This is this year. I still remain very supportive of it, and I'm glad that you have continued, Senator Lang, to push for this. I think people in your district as well as around Minnesota should appreciate the fact that you have been very diligent in pushing this forward to help the businesses. This is not something that's going to make it perfect, but it is something that we can do because ultimately the legislature did change the rules on those power plants through legislative action. And I think we both agree, Senator Lang, that if we make a change that causes ripple effects, that we need to be held accountable. And this is in at least a partial way of holding ourselves as the legislature accountable. Seeing no further discussion, this bill will be laid on the table and taken up at a future committee meeting. Members, we do not have any bills or anything on the agenda for Thursday. I will give you the afternoon off. We will meet again next Monday, the 29th,